Welcome, faithful listeners, to Season 5 of Man Buns and Jesus. This particular episode is not necessarily part of Season 5, but it's in Season 5. I'm one of your hosts, Josh Laborious, and to introduce where we're going today is my co-host and friend, Benjamin Olschlager.
So today we're going to be talking about the call process. Josh and I are both nearing 3 years of ministry when the handles kind of come off, the training wheels kind of come off for new pastors. And the call process becomes much more of an open and real thing for us. And so we kind of wanted to talk through what that looks like, for us and what that looks like in general across our denomination. Before we talk about that incredibly serious subject, here's our suffering through our theme ready? Song.
It's that time!
The cow gets me every time.
Did your Irvine student ever really like seriously take you up on a new?
I should probably check on that.
Yeah,
we have a different and probably better is a subjective term, but maybe a better theme song in the works.
One would hope. So to get us started today on this conversation about the call, it's probably good for us to talk about what we've experienced in terms of the call so far, because our first calls look a little bit different than the call process going forward. Josh, I know that your call was kind of a shock for you coming out of seminary. To the best of your ability, do you want to describe how that came to be?
Yeah. So in broad strokes, and this segment in particular is good if you're considering going to seminary, or if you have a family member in seminary, this next 5 minutes is probably really helpful for you because it'll give you a window into what finishing seminary actually looks like. So
I mean, even if you're already there and you just don't quite know how this part happens.
Yeah. Like me. I was clueless to a lot of things when I got to the center, as far as like the logistical process of how things work. But essentially how it works is toward the beginning of your fourth year, it's going to start with a meeting and a bunch of paperwork. There, the seminary, and I think it's still Nielsen. I don't know how much longer
he'll be. There's a new guy, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know the new guy, but you'll meet with whoever's in charge of placement, and you'll fill out a bunch of paperwork, and you'll say, well, what paperwork do you have to fill out? A big part of it is what is kind of your stance on pastoral practice? And by that, I mean, they're not asking much about what is your theology, because our theology is all the same. I shouldn't say it's all the same. It's all pretty, relatively speaking, it's very close to the same.
You fall within the bounds of what's acceptable in the LCMS. Which is a pretty
narrow band of acceptable theology. So what they ask is, how do you apply that? So they ask questions about what are your worship preferences? What's your attitude toward children's ministry and toward Bible class and toward how do you handle communion? Are you okay with women readers or where a bunch of different practice questions for how you do ministry and how you see yourself doing ministry? You fill this out. And it's intended to be a snapshot of here is who you think you are as a pastor or who you will be. And then another piece of paperwork is some more logistical questions like, are you okay with living in a metropolis? Are you okay with living in a large city, in a medium city, in a small city, all the way down to, are you okay with living in a town with 20 people? I don't think it's actually literally that small, but it gets pretty small. And you kind of check which boxes you're okay with. And for most of these logistical questions, you have a hard no, a okay but not ideal, and then a this is great. And then they also ask you, what regions of the country are you okay with? And the country is divided into six regions. It's pretty much a line across the middle and then two lines going vertically. This is kind of how it's divided up. And some other questions about where you want to live and what kind of the more job aspects of the ministry. And you submit all that. And honestly, then you wait for a while because congregations are submitting paperwork and whoever's in charge is kind of looking at all that and weighing different options. And another thing you kind of declare is your hope, is your intention to be a soul pastor, S-O-L-E, soul, not S-O-U-L, soul. A soul pastor means you are the only pastor on staff. The church might have a secretary, they might have a DCE, they might have some other staff members, but you would be the only pastor on staff.
The context that I fit into at the moment definitely is a soul. Josh is like
it's kind a of weird an only sort version of soul ministry.
Yeah.
And then the alternative is team ministry. And if you select soul ministry, you're pretty much done until call day. I think there are like a couple interviews where you talk through parts of your paperwork, but you're mostly just waiting to find out where you're going to go. If you do team ministry, however, a lot of those churches will either virtually or they'll send people to campus to interview with you. And the reason they do that, whereas if you're a soul, they kind of just send you wherever, is because they discovered that when they just sent guys into team ministries, sometimes it worked out, but other times there was like a major conflict right off the bat between the different pastors of the church, like a fundamental difference on something that they couldn't avoid. So they had guys that were getting there and like leaving as quickly as they could. And they were like, well, that's not helpful to anybody. So we're going to do these interviews to hopefully prevent some of that from happening, to make sure that at least off the bat, it's a fit and they can work together. And those interviews take place, I think they start as early as November sometimes, but they'll go through January, February. February is really late to do one, but
there are even a couple that happen in March, but like it,
someone messed up and you're trying to play catch up if you're doing your interview in March, probably.
Or that's just when they got around to it. I mean, these things yeah, happen.
That's
these
fair enough. Happen.
We're working with those churches here. The pace at which churches move can often be like
glacially slow.
Yeah.
So once you finish all for a lot of guys, I wasn't keeping track of this, but it seemed like a lot of the guys I talked to got somewhere between 2 and 4 interviews. I had 5. I had declared for team ministry. I had 5 interviews. 3 of those were with team ministries. 2 of them were kind of unique situations, which is they were soul, but they were some form of a mission plant, which is why there was still an interview to kind of assess compatibility, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And then after you're done with all your interviews, the person in charge will, or actually, I think you're supposed to send it after each interview. Is you rank all of the churches you've interviewed with as like, this is my preference. And I actually included why with each one. I said like, here's why it's ranked high. Here are some things I'm worried about with this call, because I figured the more information that the placement office has, the better decision they are equipped to make as far mm-hmm. as where to send me. And then you go to call day, which I just got an email this morning from the seminary for call day this year is April 23rd, which for anyone in my congregation who's listening, you may remember Eric Quezada, Matt Richter's stepson, is at the seminary, and call day is when he will be receiving his vicarage placement, which is not as big a deal as his final placement, but it's still, if you want to watch and tune into the live stream, that's something there. And so you show up to call day. Everybody's dressed up in their clerical collars, which if you've never seen one of those, it's a black shirt with like the band. And then there's a little white square on the front, like Most people, when they see it, they think Catholic priest. We wear them. Everyone in the class wears them. You file in to the chapel. There's a worship service built around it. And then you line up one at a time. They announce your call, hand you the paperwork, and that is where you are going. It is generally considered off limits to decline your first call.
There are very, very rare exceptions, and it usually has to do with mitigating circumstances that just got missed. For example, there's a my financial secretary here at Good Shepherd, Deb, for those of you who know her. Her husband went to seminary, and his first placement would have moved them, I think, to Ohio. I don't remember off the top of my head. But they asked if that could be reconsidered and if they could be put into a church closer here so they didn't have to move. She has some health issues, and finding new doctors would have been a pain, a royal pain. So
and the only way to escape, like if you just don't want to go, the only way to really get out of it is to declare for continuing education. To say, just kidding, I'm gonna finish another degree here before I leave. That's not a good look. That's hurtful to the church who has extended this call to you. So that's what first calls look like. And frankly, you do not have a lot of choice. You get the paperwork, and that is where you're going.
You get a fair amount of input on the front end, but then it's ultimately up to a bunch of people making backroom deals to decide where you're going to end up.
Yeah, the district presidents, and if you're not familiar with who they are, we have a podcast on church hierarchy somewhere in our archive that you can listen to. They have a lot of influence on who gets called where. They have a lot of pull. And ultimately, it's there. So the placement director makes recommendations, and the district presidents have to approve them, is how that works. So the district presidents have their conversations, whatever those look like. Obviously, those are closed door meetings. We don't know what those actually look like. But they'll, you know, every district president's goal is to fill all of their open calls. So they are invested in getting guys into their district, especially guys they think will stay, especially guys they think will be good. That's part of the task that they have in front of them. Now, Ben, do you want to explain what calls look like after that, or do you want me to just keep rolling?
Sure. So once you're out into your first call, there's usually kind of a moratorium of some sort of length. As you get there, the fastest I've ever seen a guy take a call out of seminary was just over a year.
You're theoretically untouchable for 3 years.
That's not true. I'd say you're theoretically untouchable for a year. And that one was the family had, I think, one kid and another one on the way, and just really needed to be closer to family to help with childcare. And I think there's some, maybe again, some health issues related there. Like it was obvious that a different situation was necessary for that particular pastor. But in most cases, the first 3 years that somebody's out of church, they cannot get called unless the church that's calling them knows of them specifically and gets special permission. I don't remember if it's from the person that they're trying to call or from the district or both, but
ultimately it is up to the person they're trying to call, but it has to be communicated through the district. Or it's supposed to be communicated through the district.
Yeah. Anyway, so like it's maybe not necessarily frowned upon, but they do make it more difficult so that the guys that are still kind of settling in out of seminary don't end up bouncing around a lot. I mean, it's just not good for churches to, you know, be churning through pastors at an incredible rate. So they do want to make sure that you have some skin in the game wherever you're at. But once you hit that 3-year mark, then it's kind of up to the pastor to decide how open they are to moving. And you communicate that with your district. You again have more paperwork to fill out to tell people what you're about.
Technically you are supposed to keep up to date at all times.
True.
It's called the set. You're always supposed to have your set up to date. You're always supposed to have your pith up to date. Which are the two like papers that they'll send.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot of guys who do that, but I'm a rule follower, so I have a reminder in my calendar every couple months. Hey, look at those. Make sure they're still right.
I don't think I've touched either one since last summer. So there's the difference between Josh and I.
Yeah, that about covers it.
Yeah. So same kind of information is publicly available. And then like you can kind of tell your district, hey, I really like where I'm at. I don't feel like moving. You can tell them, you know, if the right thing came along, I'd consider it. Or you can tell them, get me out of here. I'm burning. I think there's varying levels between those, but that's kind of the broad strokes version of like.
Now, theologically, we are always open to a call.
Yes.
There's a little bit of play of, the correct answer is, yes, I'm open to a call. But there's also some room for the practical answer, which sometimes is, God would have to hit me over the head with a 2x4 to get me to move.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably the best way to define that first category. And then the middle one is more of like a, we got a good thing going. It would take a good call to get me to go. And then the other one is, I realize that I'm called here, but they might be served better by someone else. Maybe putting the best construction on that.
Yeah, that's a generous way to put that.
I mean, there are some situations
for a spark of realism for some people.
I mean, there are certainly
the real some way to say that is these people are crazy. Get me out of here. That's an alternative to describe what that pastor is dealing with at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, and there are some situations where it's just like, I need to call because my church is on the brink of financial collapse and I'm like, it's just not sustainable what we're doing here. I mean, that's an unfortunate reality sometimes. I know that there are plenty of churches in like the rural Dakotas where a town that used to have a couple thousand people and a pretty healthy congregation, all of a sudden, you know, the local grain elevator shuts down or the lodge that had plenty of tourists over the summer closes or whatever happens and town dries up and there's just not enough people to support their own congregation. They merge with someone else or the church just closes. Like, it's not ideal, but these things happen. And sometimes when you're in one of those congregations, you put up the like, yeah, I need to go. I realize I'm called here, but like,
but also I have bills to pay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when you hit that point, when you hit that 3-year mark, and you end up kind of more generally available to the world, you can start ending up on these things called call lists, or you can start getting put on these things called call lists by your district or by another district. And that's when the church is looking for a pastor. They'll put out a message to their district and say, hey, we're looking for a guy. This is kind of what we think we'd like. This is what we've been up to. This is what we're doing as a church. The district
typically they have to do a congregational survey.
Yeah. They have to like often do like strength and weakness analysis and talk about the direction that they're trying to head as a congregation. And
which is partly the district's taking an opportunity to help the congregation actually do some self-evaluation.
Yeah.
Because that's not necessarily part of every congregation's regular habits.
True. But then once all of that information gets to the district, they put together a list of, it's usually between like 10 to 12 names, sometimes a little shorter, sometimes a little longer, of guys that are in one of those three boats, usually boats 2 and 3, the I'm open or I'm looking boats.
It almost has to be a perfect fit for them to try and take a guy who's said, I'm not moving.
Yeah, exactly. And those names will then get submitted to the congregation. The congregation will do their own digging.
Facebook stalk the guys.
Facebook stalk the guys. Look,
I'm not kidding, by the way.
Oh yeah, no, he's not.
We're told pretty clearly when we graduate seminary, make sure your social media is cleaned up.
Yep.
Some guys just delete it entirely. They're like, not worth it.
It's true. So like they'll go through that whole process of looking into whatever they can find social media wise, PIF, SET. They'll watch sermons, they'll watch Bible studies. God forbid they might listen to this podcast in future if a church is trying to call one of us. And
sorry guys.
I'm not saying like we wouldn't be open to it if you are one of those people that happens to listen to this podcast, but like
you know what you're getting at this point.
Exactly. This is relatively unfiltered. And then through all of that process, they're just trying to get a feel for narrowing down that field, usually to like 3 to 5 people that they'll actually talk to. Sometimes it's an interview. Sometimes they schedule some sort of visit. And
best practice for that is they'll do some stuff like either over email or over phone call. That it's called an inquiry. They'll say, hey, you're on our list, whatever. This isn't always how it happens, but best practice is you don't visit unless there's actually a call on the table.
Yep.
Because it is really disruptive to both congregations.
Yeah. And then after the inquiry period or that feeling out period, then the congregation gets together, decides from the, you know, however many guys they had left, who do we want to call? And they have to get together in a voters meeting. And I don't remember what the numbers are, and it might be different church to church, but a lot of churches have a pretty high bar for, like, what kind of consensus they need for a call.
Yeah. You don't call a pastor if he only has 51% support.
Exactly. That's how you set him up immediately for getting railroaded.
Yeah.
But I think my home congregation, it was like a 2/3 or 3/4 majority was needed for a call. And most of the time, when you've done as much homework as most of these call committees have done on candidates, they encourage the congregation in a helpful way towards a pretty clear consensus on who to call. And usually like the last 2-3 guys are all like, yeah, we would take any of these guys. We're just going to pick our favorite. And so most people are at that point pretty comfortable with whatever happens. And then that call comes to the pastor. And, I think at this point, Josh, maybe it's good for us to kind of talk about how we think about the call and what it would look like for us, at least at this point, to respond to that. because I know that both of us have at different points, like, had people talk to us about, you know, how willing are you to move, or like, what's your thought process on this? Nothing like even remotely close to concrete, but I know that it's gotten me thinking about, like, how do I think about this call? How do I think about what God is using me to do and where he's positioned me? And I'd be interested to hear where you're at first, and then I'll share some of my thoughts too.
Yeah. So I think this is also a good place to note for you guys listening. A call is not a job offer. Yeah. Right? That is, we are not weighing two different job offers. That's why it is, do not offer to try and buy a guy out. If he is announced that he is considering or taking a call, say, oh, well, we'll raise your salary. That is not how this works at all. Okay. The consideration, it's largely a process of trying to figure out where is the Holy Spirit calling you. And it's really hard to nail down, which is probably why people talk about them like they're job offers, but they're not. And one of the reasons, like, you go back to your first call, the reason you take it is because it's a call. And the reason you can change, or like you people move on, is because once you receive the call from a congregation. So say I were to receive a call from Good Shepherd, which is the church Ben is at. They're not calling, right? But say I was to receive a call from Good Shepherd. I, at that point, have two calls. I have my call to Edgewater, and I have my call to Good Shepherd. At which point, the process is, how do I decide which call the Holy Spirit is leading me into? Okay. So because Chris and I were thinking about this, talking about this, even before our first call, because we're like, this is probably something we should think about before we're in the middle of ministry, right? We should think about this while our heads are kind of clear and whatever else. So we kind of looked at three different categories for what do we want to think about with a call. And I'm saying we, because if a pastor is married with family, this is not a consideration that is just him. Mm-hmm. Because while it is his call, his family, his wife is going to be a big part of that ministry. So it's important that she's part of the conversation as well. So our first category, and maybe the most important category, is the ministry questions. So if I was to receive a call, it would be, what aspects of ministry am I going to be in charge of? Am I going to be heavily involved with? What staff would I be working with? What staff would I be responsible for? And this is maybe, I think, the most, at least for me, I think this is maybe the most helpful question, is, what am I uniquely suited to do? And by that, I mean, for the ministry I do here at Edgewater, what am I doing that the next guy won't be able to do just fine? So, like, preaching, for example, any pastor you call in the LCMS is going to be able to preach faithful sermons. They might be different levels of quality and interestingness, but they're going to be faithful sermons. So, like, that's, if you're preaching at one place, that's not a huge thing, of, because you can find retired guys to preach. You can find guys to preach. So it would be like, well, here I'm building community in a way that most guys can't do. Or here I'm teaching in a way that is valuable that some guys aren't equipped to do. And then you compare that with this call that I'm looking at. They're asking me to do, you know, X, Y, Z, that they will be hard pressed to find someone else who can serve in that role. And I think that is a valuable thing to weigh, because that could be the Holy Spirit saying, hey, I have someone else. Like, if, say, and again, this is just an example. Say I was to look at Edgewater and I was to say, there is nothing I'm doing here that cannot be done by whoever is next. And I was to look at Good Shepherd and say, there are a few things they're asking for that there are not many guys who can fill all these roles. Then I would say, well, that could very easily be the Holy Spirit pointing you to, I have someone else who can fill this role. I need you here. So that's, those are kind of our ministry questions. And then we also asked some questions about the congregation. What is the demographic makeup of the congregation? Is, are they all retired? Are they all young people? Are there families? Like, what's demographic makeup here? And the reason that is a ministry, that's kind of a related ministry question, is because ministry looks different for different demographic groups, and how, especially right now, how willing they are to accept the wisdom and guidance of a young pastor differs based on the congregation. If you have a congregation that's full of young pastor or young families, I'm probably going to have a pretty easy time building a credibility with them so I can teach and lead them. If it is a group of all 70 plus year olds who have all been at that church for 50 years, chances are I'm going to have to do a lot of work before any of what I say means anything to them. Okay, that's just kind of the generic reality.
Yeah, and these are generalities.
Right, so it's not true everywhere.
Yeah, there are stubborn young people
that is worth thinking about.
Yeah, there are stubborn young people, and they are very willing to move older folks.
Yeah. Some other congregational questions are, what are their practices, and then why are they calling? And what I mean by that is, if they had a pastor before, why did he leave? Mm-hmm. And this is something that I want to be clear. We're not confusing this for a job offer. But the Holy Spirit works through means. So they're all questions. What's this? These related questions. What's the size of the city it's in? How close is it for us? How close is it to a major metropolis? Chris and I like being within close enough to a major city that we can go and go do something and come back during the day. What's the climate? What is the cost of living relative to the pay they're offering? These are questions. And Joel Bierman, who he's been on the podcast before, he's one of the professors I respect most from the seminary. He was talking about how you weigh a call, and he's like, hey, if all things are equal, if ministry opportunity, if the Holy Spirit's movement is equal in both places, take the one with the higher pay. And that's fair. Now, I don't know how many situations both calls are going to be equal in the ministry ways, but if they are, take the one with the higher pay. So that's kind of how we envision thinking about calls, is kind of going through the different ministry things and then, weighing those and including some logistical questions as well. So that's how we're looking at, or we're thinking we will look at it. So what about you, Ben? What are your kind of thoughts on the matter?
So I haven't really talked this through with my wife super deeply. I mean, we've talked about like what we're looking for in a church, what we're looking for in a home, what we're looking for in the place that we like want to be. But when it comes to the call process, when I got to the Michigan district, they sent us some stuff on like how to not burn out, basically. And it was like, there were four layers to it. First was God. Second was family. Third was you. Fourth was your congregation. So first one is, you know, how's your faith? Is your faith good? Is it in a good place? Are you like, are you at peace? Are you experiencing rest? Are you able to be the hands and feet and not like experience significant amounts of worry on a day-to-day basis? And if that's true, you're in a good spot health-wise. Second is family. Is your family in a good spot? Are they stressed or are they also at peace? Are they finding opportunities for work or social activities or opportunities to just have fun or whatever the case might be? Is your family healthy? If so, you're in a good spot. Third is you. Are you healthy? This is different than is your faith good? Like, are you working 75 hours a week and stressed out of your mind? Or are you like able to take care of yourself? I think the financial piece might play in a little bit here. I think some of the stuff around, like, am I in a place geographically that makes sense for me and makes sense for the things that I enjoy doing and that my family enjoys doing, those kind of factor in here. And then last is the congregation. And that's not to say that the congregation comes last, like, out of everything, but that's the last of the four big pieces of what I would consider. I mean, there are certainly other things that you can add to that list, like how close am I to a good donut shop? That's going to come like 100th down the list. Who cares?
Hey, don't put it that low.
Sure, you're right.
It's good donuts, like, are hard to find, man.
It's more like 40th. You're right.
Top 50 easily.
Oh yeah, certainly. But like,
mostly because I don't know if I can come up with 50 different things to look at.
Dude, just start nitpicking. I'm sure you can get there real fast.
Fair enough.
So when I get to the congregation piece, it's about fit. It's about the ministry that they're doing. It's about the culture of the church. It's about the personality of the people. It's about how well I fit in stylistically into what they're doing. Cause I recognize I don't fit in everywhere. Like Josh said, there are contexts that each of us are better suited to.
There are some congregations who would not look at either of us because of the title of this podcast.
Yeah, that's probably true. And like the different preferences that we have, like, would kind of pigeonhole us into certain places and exclude us from others. So
neither of us wears a clerical shirt on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think that's enough
to put us off some lists and to get us on some other lists.
True. I basically only do on Good Friday, and right now I can't find the one that fits. So anyway, all of that is to say, like, I think that's kind of where my call process deliberation would go too. Like, if my faith's in a bad spot at the church that I'm serving at, and I can look down the rest of the list and go, yeah, I think my situation is contributing to my faith being in a rocky spot, that would probably encourage me to go. But if my faith is in a good spot at the moment, and like there's peace and hope, and like I see the work of Christ in my life and in the lives of those around me, it would be hard to go. And then family situation would be the next biggest piece. Like, is my family good? Am I good? How's the congregation doing? And I think my process would kind of follow that list like that. But for me, it's as soon as that, you know, day comes where I receive a call, because newsflash to both of our congregations, there is a substantial pastor shortage in the LCMS. We will get calls.
After the 3 years, after that three mark that is coming up this summer, we are some of the most desirable candidates on the market because we are no longer fresh out of school. We have some experience. We kind of know sometimes what we're doing. But we only have 3 years of experience, so we are still in some of the lowest brackets when it comes to how much do you have to pay for experience. Yep. So that makes us very desirable candidates.
Yep.
So buckle up, because by all accounts, most guys, when they hit that 3 year mark, they will get a lot of calls. And the official process is, if you receive a call, not if you're accepting it, if you receive an official call, you have to tell your congregation.
Yep.
You have to tell your congregation, your circuit visitor, your district president, everyone all at once. You have to send an email, to everybody. You have to announce it in service. Like, so every time we get a call, we're supposed to tell you. And we, yep. I believe we both intend to tell you. So don't panic just because your pastor says, I have received a call to XYZ. And don't send hate mail to the other congregation. That's not cool.
Yeah. You heard of that happening?
No, but I can imagine it might.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because the reality is every time that a pastor accepts a call, one church is getting a pastor, and that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And another church is losing a pastor, and that, especially with the shortage, is very difficult.
Yeah. I mean, to put some of this in context, I think it was Sam Fink. Do you remember him? He was, I think, a fourth year or second year.
Yeah. Sam Fink is a great guy. He's one of like three chapel sermons that I still remember.
That's high praise. That is really high praise.
I went to every chapel service unless I was sick and dying, which means I probably heard hundreds of chapel sermons, ladies and gentlemen. And I remember like three of them. His is one of them.
Anyway, I think it was either last year or 2 years ago. I don't think it was right when he hit the 3 year mark, but I'm guessing it was probably whenever he said, yeah, I'm open to a call. He had like three or four different calls all at the same time. And it might have been more. I just remember like we're friends on Facebook, and every time he got another call, he'd post something about.
I can do a quick Facebook stalky stalk and tell you.
Yeah, there were at least three.
Continue to vamp.
There were at least three, maybe four calls that all existed at the same time. The call to his congregation at the time, which I believe was in Indiana. And then there were two more for sure, and maybe a third to a different context. And like, you never know.
Sam is no longer on Facebook.
Good for him. You just never know with the call. There was another pastor in my circuit who had three calls at the same time. One to a church in Texas, one to a church in Ohio, and one to the congregation he was serving in Michigan. And like, these things just happen. You end up on lists that people are going to figure out, you know, how willing or not willing you are to move, especially if they like you and they think you're going to be a good pastor for them. So like, none of this is to try and scare, at least for me, none of this is to scare my congregation. Josh, I'll let you say that of your own accord.
No, I'm not trying to scare anybody.
But we just want to make it.
This is how it works.
Yeah, make it known this is how it works. If
you think it's stressful for you, I want you to put this in context. For some of you, and if you're listening to this podcast, it might be more frequently, you think about church stuff once a week for a couple hours on Sunday morning. It is
maybe on a Wednesday night.
Right? So we're thinking about this stuff all the time. And when you hear that we have a call, you're like, oh no, Sunday mornings might change. Some other aspects of your life might change. And I don't want to downplay that. I can understand, especially if you really feel a connection with your pastor, that is a difficult thing to think about. But the pastor is weighing a really, really significant decision and trying to take into account what is the will of the Holy Spirit here and where can he be doing ministry to serve God. And for most guys, because most of us take this really seriously, that is a really weighty, heavy. So pray for, if your pastor has a call, pray for them. And frankly, do whatever you can to support them while they're kind of weighing those calls, because that's not an easy decision that they're thinking through. I don't mean like show up at their house with casseroles. I mean like don't call them every 5 minutes asking, well, have you made a decision yet? That's not going to help.
Honestly, I wouldn't necessarily turn down the hot dish. Like,
what a Midwesterner. You called it a hot dish? What the heck, man?
Dude, it's a Minnesota thing.
Whatever. Whatever, man.
Yeah. I mean, excuse me. Something caught in my throat there. Josh is going to leave that whole thing in, isn't he?
What?
Yeah,
you're going to leave that whole thing. I don't cut these anymore. I download them from this new platform and immediately post them.
Good for you.
That's why I love the new platform, everybody. Two thumbs up for Riverside FM.
Anyway, the big piece that I want to highlight from what Josh said is prayer. Like, when we receive a call, even our first call that we got out of seminary, that one that we didn't have a ton of say in, and it was almost kind of make it or break it, or take it or break it.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever that is. There's a lot of prayer that goes into that yes or no. Like, you have a pretty strong gut feeling off the bat, but I think they encourage you to take a couple of weeks at the very least, even with that first call.
You're
really only considering. I think it's 2 to 4 weeks.
Common courtesy is you respond within 2 weeks once the call papers have been issued. That's what I've heard is common courtesy. Just because the congregation who's working through the call process is in limbo while you have a call. Mm-hmm. And for a process that takes that long, they don't want you to hold on to it for forever. You can take as long, well, probably not as long as you need, but there's no like hard limit, but I've heard 2 weeks is common courtesy.
Yeah. I think the range that I've heard is 2 weeks at minimum. Most guys do the minimum. Because like most of the time you can come up with a prayerful and thoughtful and faithful answer in a couple weeks, even on something as big as this, but sometimes it takes longer, but you don't want to push it more than a month. And if you're not getting a clear answer out of God after a month, chances are your answer is no, you should stay where you are. You should keep doing what you're doing.
Or your answer is you're thinking about this the wrong way. Ask better questions.
Also possibly true. Also possibly true. But yeah, circling back to what Josh said earlier, this is not a financial decision. This is not a,
it's not a,
am I going to be doing work that I like better decision? This is not a,
you typically, like if a regular person doing a regular job would be considering two job offers or a job offer. Yeah. All of those questions that come along with the job part of it are on the bottom of our list.
Yeah.
They're still on there, but they're at the bottom of the list. They're above the donut shop, I guess. Whether or not I can insure my family is more important to me than proximity to a donut shop.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of those things are obviously going to weigh into some of those other categories that Josh and I each have, like what my benefits look like. Do I have good enough insurance for, my wife works full enough time right now that she has her own insurance, but like say there's a point in time where that's not the case. Do I have enough insurance that she can be covered, or, you know, any future kids could be covered? Like, is my salary good enough that we can actually afford to eat every day? Is that's going to be a part of some of those conversations. Yeah. But ultimately, well,
like, I'll tell anyone who's listening, if I receive a call and we can't see a way where Chris can stay at home with Ezekiel and any other kids that we end up having, if I get a call that she would have to work, I am going to decline that call. Because it is important for us that Chris can stay at home with the kids, at least until they're in school. So, yeah. So, yeah, like, those elements do come into consideration. But
the ultimate question is, where does God need me? And, you know, that's sometimes that's not going to look like the most logistically optimist or like optimal location. I know guys who have gone from, you know, really healthy, sizable, multi-staff churches to dying single pastor churches that worship 35, 40 people on a Sunday because they felt called to go
and serve in that place.
Yeah. Love those people. Give them direction. And so, you know, wild things happen. And I think this is where we can kind of get into takeaways, because this is going to sound a lot like a takeaway. Are you just using sound effects at this point?
Nice. I did. I do want to, before you get to your very serious takeaway, you said wild things can happen. And my thought is, especially because we're two wild and crazy guys.
All right, Steve Martin.
Actually, I was referencing Family Guy, who was referencing Steve Martin. But continue with your very serious, very solemn takeaway, Benjamin.
I don't think it's a solemn takeaway. I think it's just like, don't fear the call process. Like, it is what it is, and God's going to do what he's going to do through it. And, like, if your pastor leaves, okay, your congregation's still around, and those are the people that you've chosen to do life with and grow in your faith with. You can find another pastor. It may not be the exact same person. They may not have as good of hair as Josh and I. But you know what?
I guarantee it will not be the same person, because no two people are the exact same.
Yeah, yeah, you are.
Don't expect that of your pastor.
Yes, definitely. I thought you were going to make a joke about the hair thing.
Oh no, you both have phenomenal hair. Well, and a lot of pastors are bald, frankly. So, good luck.
I wasn't going to go there, but
oh, I will. I'm shameless.
I'm going to send this to my the pastor up the road and my circuit visitor bald? And see what they say about it. Both of them are bald. Yeah.
Hi, Ben's bald friends. Sorry, man, you're bald.
Digging a deeper hole here.
Don't call she bears down on me.
One of them has threatened. If you don't know the reference, early chapters of 2 Kings.
Great. It's a great story.
It is. It's complicated. Anyway, don't fear the call process. God's going to do what God's going to do. And honestly, you should care more about the people in your congregation than your pastor leaving. Like, God has placed those people in your life to be your neighbors, for you to love and serve them. So keep doing that, even if the guy that you like listening to preach takes off, because God is calling him somewhere else. So
I think my takeaway is, I want to drive home this point. A call is not a job offer. Those two are not the same thing. Don't think about it as just a job offer. Mm-hmm. With that, if this podcast, if you thought it was interesting, I don't know if you're listening to this and you're not a pastor, I don't know how helpful it is necessarily, but if you thought it was interesting, please share it on whatever social media of choice, or just text it to your friends, especially if you have a friend who is thinking about being a pastor, who is in seminary, who's in that process. Go ahead and send it to them. This maybe will give them some clarity that they don't want to admit that they need. Because I was in that boat when I was in the seminary at some different points. And if you like the podcast, if you like what we're doing here, go ahead and subscribe. Like, rate the podcast if whatever platform you're on allows for that. We appreciate it. It kind of helps us keep pursuing our mission to bring people a better understanding of the faith in an accessible and fun way. So we hope this has been that for you. We hope it's been helpful for you. And with that, brothers and sisters, go in peace. Serve the Lord.
Thanks be to God.